everyone, I'm Mel and this is the She Dares podcast. Every week on the show we interview inspiring women from all over the world, mostly friends of friends who have experienced different moves in their life, positive changes, hardful times. And yeah, today we've got an excellent guest. Her name is Emma Davies. I met her last year during some business coaching that we did with an excellent coaching group, actually, called Untamed Coaching. You can look them up. I'll put them in the show notes for you. Emma currently lives in Canada, but she's currently sitting in the UK working on her business that she founded last year. It's called The Happy Flock, and she basically helps create a positive mindset and community feel within corporate environments. We'll talk a little bit about how she came to set up the business and also some struggles that she might have had when she was emigrating from the UK to Canada. Right, she's here. Let's get her on the show. Hey, Emma, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you. I just came back from holidays. I feel quite relaxed.
Good. Yeah.
Usually when I come back, it's like coming back from an action sports holiday. I'm like absolutely exhausted, but I feel pretty relaxed this time.
Oh, good. Because I say it's the sort of holiday you need a holiday from.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast. At She Dares, obviously, we're all about interviewing inspiring women. We want to talk to real people with like stories that, you know, people can resonate with. Not looking for the next multimillionaire story to come out, although that would be nice.
But of course.
Yeah, so can you tell us a little bit about you, and was there any kind of pivotal moments or something that you wanted to share with the audience?
Well, I guess my pivotal moment was I was happily working in the UK with no plans of ever living overseas, and I got offered a job to go and develop a brand over in Los Angeles for the West Coast of America. And a lot of people are like, oh, you obviously said yes straight away. But for me, it wasn't that easy. Like, I've got quite a large but very close network of friends and family all across the UK. But I spend time with them in person quite frequently. That's kind of, I'm an in-person kind of gal. And that's like how I like to hang out. It's more fun. So I really wasn't sure, because it's, you know, it's an eight-hour time difference, long flight. But you know, after some thought, I was like, well, you know what? The worst thing that could happen is at the end of my days in, you know, later life. And I think, huh, I wonder what if I had taken that opportunity. And that alone basically was the thing that made me say yes. Because I was like, well, once you go, if you hate it, you turn around and you come back. But if you never try, that's the only thing I could possibly regret, was not trying. And, you know, I had an amazing time. But I have to say, sort of just arriving over there, it's all the things you never think of, like actually just flying into Los Angeles at the, I'd never been there. There was no time to go and visit before I took the job.
Oh, wow.
And I realized how much I like the color green, because as I was flying over LA, it was at the back end of like their very severe drought. It was so brown, like looking out the window of the airport, it was so dead and brown. And I was like, and that was what made me think, what the fuck have I done?
That's so funny.
And then you get there and, you know, work took over, you know, you just get on with it. And it's one of those things, it's pros and cons. I was so busy, I just got on with getting stuff done. But I had a quite a quick wake up call about a month, 2 months into being there. My dad basically nearly died. He had to be rushed to hospital with heart problems. The nature of what it was, the message that was coming through was, you shouldn't expect him to survive this. You shouldn't expect him to get to the... So I had to suddenly hop on a plane, which when you're that, you know, my brother was able to just drive straight there. I had to wait for a flight, get on the flight, sit on it for a long time, and then get there. And, you know, that really shook me. There was a period after that where I was like, am I going to go back? Because as much as I have this, what if I didn't do it and would I regret the opportunity? I was like, the people in your life are there for as long as they're there. And once they're not there, you know, they're not there. So that was really challenging for me.
Not being able to turn around like in an hour, half an hour or something, you know, that's,
yeah,
really tough.
And it, I mean, that was like a second pivotal moment that for me rammed home how important people are to me, and that I will never compromise on being able to spend time with the people I care about for anything. I stayed around the UK for a bit, watched Dad come home, spent some time, and then I did go back. And I had an amazing time. But I think actually the unexpected thing was like Los Angeles was always a 3-year contract. And so I knew, okay, it's 3 years and then you'll be back. And I was traveling home 4 or 5 times a year because it was for a British company. So I was able to keep that connection. But it was challenging not having that regular support that I'm used to. But I was then very fortunate that I quite quickly made a really strong group of friends in LA. And I had fantastic people that I worked with. And I would consider them my friends still now, the people I met over there. But my mum sent me off with some advice and it went along the lines of, don't you dare meet an American, get married and not come back. Turns out she should have been a little bit more wide ranging because I met a Canadian and I got married. And that's at the moment I'm waiting for my Canadian residency. So I moved to Canada actually at the beginning of lockdown, COVID, so 2020. And I quickly realized there's a big difference with doing things when you know it's got an end date and doing things long term. So I think I always had that little backup nugget in the back of my head related to LA that this is time limited. Mm-hmm. And actually, if I walked out tomorrow, it would be tough, but it would be fine. And moving to Canada, I kind of long-term away from this support network in the middle of a lockdown was a lot more challenging for me.
Yeah, knowing that you had only 3 years in LA, what I get from you, it was almost an easier decision because you were like, well, you know, I'm going to see all my friends and my family again anyway, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. But with the lockdown, did that mean that then the borders were closed?
Yeah. Borders were closed, couldn't travel back to see anyone, didn't know anyone really there. A couple of people who were sort of friends of my husband, but we weren't even allowed to really hang out with each other anyway. And the nature of his job, he would go away for like 2 weeks at a time. So I spent a lot of time in a house by myself, which is dangerous in terms of the amount of things you can start thinking about. Mm-hmm. And questioning your decisions. But I think, you know, the old saying of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger is very true. I wouldn't say it's plain sailing and always has been. I'm not like, ooh, I just worked it out. But there was a lot of time in there to sort of think, what are the important things to me? And again, that became a pivotal moment because I'd always said for my whole life, at some point, I want to work for myself. At some point, I'd like to do something for myself, but I don't know what yet. And it was basically that reality of, well, actually, if I want to still be able to spend time more than just a week here and there back with everyone in the UK, because I couldn't face the thought that I only see them for a week or two a year, but I also want to be able to operate and live in Canada, the solution is do your own thing, Emma, and make it work. So it's actually what sent me off down the track of setting up my own business that I could run remotely from either Canada or the UK, allowing me to spend extended periods of time in both places.
You talked about your support network. When you were in LA, obviously having a place of work, you're going to create some connections. And you said you've got some friends that still hold true to you today. Given the fact that you moved to Canada in the middle of a pandemic and setting up your business, how has that affected you both, I think, mentally and physically in terms of the logistics of setting up your business?
I think mentally it was a real struggle. Again, it really highlighted to me how important people are to me. And again, the importance of that deeper connection. I'm not very good at I need someone I can really speak to about anything. And until I get there, I feel kind of a bit like on my own and alone. When I was in LA, I did a lot of going out drinking, and I met lots of other fellow single people, and then we all hung out together. And one of the things is, like, you couldn't do the social bit. You couldn't go out and socialise because you're in a lockdown. So I did actually, I joined a local co-working space, was doing not quite a mastermind, but like a mastermind online for their members. So I actually joined the co-working space, even though I couldn't physically go in, so that I could join that sort of network. And that was really helpful. But again, like I say, you don't, when you're just meeting people weekly on a Zoom, you're not getting that level of connection. And I found, I would say for my mental health, it was awful. Like, I definitely went into some very, very low places. And, you know, the sort where you struggle to get out of bed or to see the point of things. And I would say the result of that, it definitely delayed my ability to start my business, because my confidence went through the floor as well. And it just wasn't the right place to try and create something, because even when the ideas came up, the energy wasn't there to take them forward. They sort of came up and then they flopped by the wayside about a day or two later, when I sort of felt really low again. And, I guess it's some of this is a thing that lots of people found in COVID, is you're in your house and you sleep in it, and then you work in it, and then you sleep in it, and then you work in it. And that as well, it was a challenge to keep the motivation to get out of my pajamas, make myself wear something that made me feel like I'm actually going to do some work.
So, like, with the ideas that you said, you know, you kind of had these ideas and then you didn't have, like, the motivation or the willpower to kind of, like, move it forward. Do you think that's, like, a direct impact of not having, you know, your besties around just to have a cup of tea and just be like, this is my ideas, I've got 10 of them, let's bash it out, let's see what's the best?
Definitely. I think, yeah, that's an element of it. I think mostly in that, speaking to people who know me well, they could have helped me bash through the ridiculous ideas that just weren't appropriate to me much more quickly, because I find myself, and there's lots of dynamics that, you know, at play, I suppose, in that because I was only just starting out my own business, nothing related to COVID or any of that, but I spent time thinking, well, I should do this business because it's tied to something I can clearly do, even though it doesn't interest me and bores the life out of me. But I felt like, well, it could commercially make money, so I should do that. And then, you know, I nearly started teaching yoga. I love yoga. I still do it, like, very regularly. And I did yoga teacher training, so I could teach it. But actually, that's not me at all. And even recently, actually, last week, I was catching up with a friend and she was like, yeah, I was really surprised at that when you sort of started going down that route. Because she's like, it's just not you, it just didn't feel right. And I think it's just that, like, having people who really know you, it just helps you cut through the crap a lot quicker. You sort of be like, genius idea, and they'll be like, yeah, but you actually hate doing that, which is going to be like 80% of the time. You're like, oh, but I would go right down that alleyway, start creating plans before I realized that for myself. So it just made it a slower process. And again, the confidence thing, when your confidence is low, your besties, the people who know you really well, are the ones that can help just lift that energy to keep you going.
So now, being out in Canada, where are you at now? What are you setting up?
So I have set up a company called The Happy Flock, and it basically is about making business better. So I have a fundamental belief that business on this planet should be there not just for the financial gain of that corporation or the financial gain of the people at a senior level there, but the purpose of business is to elevate the entire communities around it. So my whole life, I've probably irritated the people I work with, because I've worked in sales, so I'd often drop in and see different people. And if we were going to a coffee shop, or if I had to stay in a hotel, I'm like, don't put me in one of the big chains. We're going to find the local independent and we're going to support them. And it was actually really exciting at the recent Met Gala to see all the different people that were coming out wearing statement dresses and stuff that were related to making the world more equitable. So building economic equity. And I think, you know, there's a place for global business, but we've got to start putting more support into local businesses, because when you shop local, you benefit the local economy. But the other big thing I believe in is that we spend too much time in work for it not to be really good fun. And I think that's what I want to do, is help businesses, small to medium sized businesses, do what they need to do, be successful in their own right, but to use their growth to help the community around them and absolutely make it an enjoyable experience for the people that are working there.
That sounds absolutely awesome. So was there any particular reason kind of why you went down that corporate business route?
It's probably a few different things. Like I say, I believe in the importance of small to medium-sized businesses to sort of develop economic equity for and build local communities up. But also, you know, I spent 15 years in the corporate world, and I definitely worked with people who cared very openly and very obviously about the people that they managed or led. And I've seen the results of when quite the opposite is happening, and people feel uncared for, ignored. And ultimately, I've seen the damage that business can do on mental health. And we have created a world that is, or certainly in the West, it's a capitalist society, which by default means that business is at the forefront of it. And we all spend probably almost the majority of our lives in work. That environment cannot be a place that is damaging people's health. It can't be a place, worse still, that doesn't care about the fact it's damaging people's health. And I think there's enough case studies coming up now and examples of when you can actually, you can be focused driven, you can have clear targets, people can be accountable for their work, but it can be enjoyable at the same time. I don't know if it's linked or not, but for me, it feels it is. At university, I joined the officer training corps of the army, and for various reasons made the decision that whilst I respect what the military do, I didn't want to join it. But I have plenty of friends and family who are in. But for me, the two things that I pull strongly from what I learned in my time there is about the importance of integrity and the power of camaraderie. And that's what it's really, those are the two things that I just think need to be instilled into corporate business. And people need to start seeing how that can actually really, it boosts them. I don't want it to be about being nice to your people drives your sales, because that still makes it all about finances, the be all and end all. Sure. And I think we've got the wrong thing there. I think, yes, if we can, you need to be financially successful. If there isn't a business, then you're not employing anyone, you're not helping anyone. But there's so much more good that can be done that we shouldn't rate it just on that alone. I used to, with my teams, I always used to sort of just be open, honest. We'd build a great community with us. We actually cared about each other, had each other's back. So sometimes, you know, if the shit hits the fan, like sometimes, you know, we all mess up. I'd mess up. I forgot to tell them about something that needed doing. And I'd just say, guys, totally my fault. Should have told you about this about a month ago. And we've now got 2 days to get it done. But because of that care, because of that close connection, we made it happen. And we laughed at each other along the way.
I fully agree. The amount of workplaces that I've been in where it's just been like these corporate environments where you have teams that are just fighting with each other because they want an extra piece of the pie. And it's like, yeah, we're all after the same thing, actually. Yeah. Like, we're all on the same wavelength. We want the same, you know, goal. And it's really interesting as well with like agencies and clients.
Yeah.
It always seems like such a fight. And actually, if you listen to each other, understand what the kind of common ground is and work together, understand each other, what our strengths are, what others' strengths are, what our weaknesses are, it can be so much better. Looking back at all the things that had happened since you moved from the UK, is there anything that you would have done differently or anything that you regret?
I don't think I regret anything. If I had the power of hindsight prior to the point at which you generally get hindsight, i.e. if I'd seen COVID come in, I might have done a different type of residency application to go into Canada that would have been come through quicker. But I chose an approach that allowed me to fly in and out of Canada whilst waiting for the actual residency to come through. I think that's probably the only thing I'd have changed. I mean, I've learned to be a lot more just relaxed about what happens and when it happens, and just to deal with things as they come my way. Again, I'm not claiming to be some sort of Zen warrior. I have freakouts along the way. I sometimes cry. I sometimes wonder, why am I doing what I'm doing? But I have learned that if you've got the sort of longer term view in your mind of why you're doing what you're doing and where you hope to get to, you kind of it flows okay. I feel quite proud to say, no, I don't think I'd have done anything differently at all.
Do you know, I love asking that question, because most of the time everyone says no.
Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't have changed anything, because you wouldn't be where you are today.
Yeah.
And it does make you think.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes when you're down in the weeds, you're like, oh, you know, this could be so much better, that could be so much better. But actually, I wouldn't have changed anything. So
yeah,
everything's pretty cool.
I'm in a bit of a weird situation at the moment, because like I said, I have done the official move to Canada. And a lot of my stuff is now in Canada, but not all of it, because the bulky stuff I can't ship until I get residency. But I actually came back to the UK in early June, because it was my birthday and it was various of my friends' birthdays, and there was a few family things on. And I actually am still in the UK because my mum and dad need some support. My dad's had health issues. So again, coming back to that importance of the nearest and dearest, and me and my husband had a chat, and the summer's his busy time, so he's away a lot. So I was like, well, I'm more use here. And whilst I'm currently limited as to what work I can do in Canada, because I can work in Canada only for UK businesses, because I haven't yet got the residency with the work permit that allows me to even contact or speak to Canadian businesses. So I was like, well, in the UK, I can help my mum and dad. I can crack on with some extra work. But I had a moment last night chatting to my husband, because I obviously haven't seen him since June and quite possibly won't see him till Christmas. And I said, yeah, I'm having one of those what am I doing moments, because it's always a tie for me now, because I say about this need to be near my nearest and dearest, and I am with a lot of them here, but then my husband's there and I haven't done more than have at most an hour Zoom time with him since the beginning of June. So it's always that moment of why am I doing what I'm doing, which is why it's so important to have that sort of ultimate view and have that person. He's very good. He's like, you know why you're doing it. We've discussed this. This is but a small blip in what is our entire life together. Yeah. And it makes more sense to do it this way. And it does. But it's, whilst I have no regrets, I definitely have moments where I'm like, what am I doing?
So yeah, you definitely need to check in. But that's why it is so important as well. And it's so good that your husband is like, yeah, reminder where we're going, what's the end vision. And yeah, you know, thinking about it, 6 months is only a small blip.
Yeah, exactly.
Are there any pieces of advice that you'd like to leave the listeners with today?
I think probably the main one for me that I've kind of learned along the way is to be open. And I mean that in two different ways. So one, in terms of like, maintaining connection with people when you're split from away from them geographically, it's being open in terms of what you talk about, having those people who you really can bear your soul to, and being prepared to do it. I'm sure some people will get this. Like you can be in, you know, really deep relationships, and there's some things that are still hard to say. Like I haven't always found easy to talk about my emotions. So like this even makes me laugh saying it, but I establish, because sometimes I get stressy and I let things build up, like particularly if my husband's been away or and I'm away from him and something's bothering me, but it's almost it's got so intense that to try and say it would come out as a passive aggressive blurby kind of nonsense. So we created what I call the safe word, which is mermaid. And if I say mermaid, he knows I basically mean things are getting on top of me. There is one thing that's stressing me out that I want to talk to him about, and I'm afraid that it will come out wrong and upset him. So then once I say that, he just knows to give me a big hug, say everything will be all right. Or if obviously we're over Zoom, you try and word a hug. And then I just slowly say what I'm trying to talk about until I can say it succinctly. And it feels like such a weird, forced, ridiculous thing to do, because it sounds weird. But actually, it's allowed me to share stuff with him I have never been able to share with anyone. So we have such a level of openness between us. And save for having the weird safe word, I've done similar stuff with my parents. Last time I was back, I get very stressed in the few days before I'm leaving the UK, because I get sad. Everyone gets sad. Mum, you know, there's tears. And I was like, there's things I want to say, but I just feel so awkward sitting and talking about them. So I wrote them letters. I wrote them each an individual letter telling them how much I love them, how much they've supported me, what's going on in my head, i.e. what are the things that stress me out, but not, you know, letting them know they don't need to worry because I'm working through it, but I'm really grateful for their support. And I think so that level of openness with people, doesn't need to be everyone, obviously, but that really gives you that strength. And it means they can really see you for what's really going on, not have to try and half guess what's going on.
I love that. It's so cool. I think I'm going to steal that.
Yay, do it. And then the other one is to be open to opportunity and what could happen. And that idea of you can't control everything. You know, as you said, I didn't expect to end up in LA. I didn't expect to end up in Canada. But I just have a trust that I've created an image of where I want to go. I've visualized what I want my life to ultimately look like. And each day I just take little steps towards it. And each day I deal with what comes back my way. But it's just being open to what comes your way, who you meet. So often we assume whether, you know, particularly when it comes to like building a business, I assume, oh, that is the chief exec of a company. He's going to be far more used to me than this person who I used to work with over there, but didn't have as many connections. But you never know, that person who you didn't think had as many connections might have the one connection that is more important to you than anything else. So yeah, just be very open in your perspective.
Awesome, Emma. Thank you so much for being on the show. As you know, everyone gets to give me a dare. Yeah, have you thought about something that I
have thought about something. So as I say, one of the things that I haven't yet mentioned that was very odd for me with my overseas experiences, I have in recent years frequently found myself spending extended periods of time in locations where my clothing is not. So I've actually had to borrow a lot of other people's clothes. Like even whilst I'm in the UK now, I'm wearing a lot of my mum's clothes. Now, bearing in my mind, my mum is in her mid-70s and we have very different style. But even in Canada, I was borrowing clothes of Daryl's friends and their wives. So this is my challenge. Find a friend whose style is the absolute opposite to yours and go and spend a day wearing their clothes and take note of how it makes you feel.
I love that. Okay, yeah. That's a good one. I have to pick someone now. Yeah, interesting. I actually have a town right here full of 80-year-old people, so maybe I'll go knock on next door.
I love it.
It's definitely going to be a dress involved because I never wear dresses.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
Not sure if I can stretch to high heels, but...
No, fair enough.
Let's see.
There's a danger aspect with that when you're not used to them anyway.
Mm-hmm. I'll go all out. I'll go into work.
Oh, excellent. Okay, yeah. Brilliant. You can see how you feel and how others react to your new style.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Emma, for being on the show. Where can people find you or The Happy Flock online?
For The Happy Flock, I'm in the process of setting up a website. So there will be a happyflock.com, but that's probably a month or so off. So you can find me on LinkedIn by searching for The Happy Flock.
Awesome. All right, then speak to you very soon. Take care. I think I've chosen the right person. I'm not sure if she's going to be down for it. I hope she is. I think she's going to be down for something like that. But it's a girl called Marlena. She's a co-worker of mine. She's super into fashion. She dresses really well. I'm just not sure if her clothes will fit me. She's, I'm a bit bigger than her. So I'll ask her and I'll see what she says. Fingers crossed. Okay, awesome. Marlena was super excited. She said yes, and we are going to do it tomorrow. So I'm a little bit nervous because I know her style, and it like a lot of the stuff is quite different to my style. So I'm really interested what she's going to pick. I think it's definitely going to be a dress, but let's see. I will come in early tomorrow, and yeah, we're going to get changed at the office and head on up and walk through.
So there are the tights, there is the blouse, and there's the dress, and then those shoes.
A dress?
Yes.
Okay. I seriously haven't worn tights for years.
I feel like a man in drag in heels.
Okay, I've just got changed. I'm just about to head upstairs to see everyone. I really hope no one laughs at me.
I knew you'd laugh.
Look.
Yes. I feel super uncomfortable.
No one else said anything.
No, only I'm laughing in your face. Sorry.
It was a really, really great day. Thanks, Emma. It really got me thinking about the power of fashion, actually, because it really made me feel completely different and super insecure. But like throughout the day, I felt better, you know, because no one really cared. I recommend to anyone to try it, to be honest. Whilst I didn't feel confident doing it, it's actually made me think twice now about what I wear. And I also felt that I wanted to kind of do Marlena justice by like carrying myself a bit better and caring a bit more, just walking a bit smarter and stuff around the office. I don't know if that makes sense, but we have quite different styles. I have a very distinct kind of skate style, and I generally don't really care what I'm wearing in the morning. It's usually I just throw on a t-shirt and jeans and some Vans, and that's it. Yeah, maybe some days I want to dress up and make myself feel nicer and more professional, perhaps. If you want to check out how the dare went down, there's a reel on Instagram for every single one of them. Follow us at _shedares, and let me know if you decide to do any of them with me. I'd love to see what you get up to.